This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to What's News Dunedin, brought to you by Casa Valencia, the radio show that spawned from the 23,000 plus strong local Otipoti Dunedin What's News Dunedin Facebook group. The group has been putting the social back in the social media since 2020 with respectful adult debate and a sense of humour. I'm your host, Richard Knights. On today's show, we're talking to our wonderful guest, Megan Portakey, the University of Otago's first T-pole tittity, and I'm not sure I've said that properly, who'll be telling us more about themselves and what they do, as well as helping us look back at the posts that have generated the most interactions on the post 7 days on the What's News Dunedin Facebook group. Those three posts this week are real estate agents targeting recently bereaved households, trying to see if they want to sell their house, the new Jacinda Ardern documentary, which is now out on Netflix, and the apparent unravelling of Donald Trump and the delicate ceasefire in the Middle East, if you can even call it that. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you.
Maybe move a little bit closer to the microphone, otherwise no one will hear you because I've got a big voice. Before we get into all that newsy stuff, we do have our pun of the week. I don't know if you're on my page or not, and you don't have to be.
I'm not.
That's all right. There's no prerequisite to be. But what we have is a Pun Day Monday. So on Pun Day Monday, I get everyone in the group as best they can to bring their best dad jokes, their best puns, and what we do on a Friday. So the one that gets the most laugh reacts comes on the show with me on Friday. Right. So all we're trying to do here is see whether it comes off the page and becomes it comes to the spoken word, and it's still funny. Because obviously people thought it was funny on the page because they're giving it the laugh reacts. There's no more science to it than that. But this week's pun of the week is this. I had a cross-eyed teacher. They couldn't control their pupils.
I really struggle with stuff like that.
But it made you giggle, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, yes.
So congratulations to whoever that was. I can't remember who that was now. Obviously still funny. Now, we also have three pop questions. So these are my questions that between myself and my wife, we've decided these questions get under the skin of all our guests, right? So these are the questions that forget everything else that goes on for the next hour of the show. This tells my audience exactly what they need to know about you, the person.
Okay.
Right? There's no science involved. We just made this stuff up, right? So, first question, cream teas. Now, where you have a scone, you have jam, you have cream, what goes on first, the jam or the cream?
Oh, definitely the jam.
Perfect. It's the only question you get wrong on my show. Absolutely. It's the science supports what you and I believe, Megan, and that's basically all it's about. It's easier after this because there's no other questions you can get wrong, right? Second important question, who is your favourite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
I don't know any of them. Raphael, was that one?
Yeah, that's what
I just remember the name.
Yeah, they're all Renaissance painters. So you've got Raphael, yes. Leonardo, Donatello, and Michelangelo.
It was in my era, but I never engaged. Sorry.
No, that's fine. There's no requirement to be a Turtles fan. The fact you knew one of their names was enough.
I did.
Absolutely. Yeah. So score that as a win, if I would say. Now, the third question is a thinker. Right, so you don't have to jump right in. I mean, if you know the answer, like just go for your life, right? Okay. But if you don't have to, you can keep it a little bit of time. Would you rather have an unlimited gift card to your favorite restaurant or your favorite clothing store?
Oh, clothing store.
Didn't even have to think, did
you? No, that's just a no-brainer. Close.
And anyone that knows me knows that mine would be restaurant.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I just. Eating is
important.
Is my thing.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, but yeah. Definitely everyone knows it. Clothes is my thing.
That's fine. I wear the same stuff. I've been wearing the same stuff since the early 80s. So like everyone who knows me knows kind of clothes isn't my thing. But eating is something that I challenge myself to do regularly.
It's important.
Daily. Yeah, it keeps me alive. Yeah. You know, but it's more than that to me. It's a mission. You know, if I could have been a competitive eater, I think, and made money out of it.
You would have done that?
I think I would have done that, like to be completely fair.
I do often think regularly, weekly, about what my last meal would be.
Have you come to a decision on that?
Yes.
What would it be?
Power patties.
See, I don't like those. I don't have just had a bad lot because this was years ago, and I was in one of the local fish and chip shop in Bright when it had one, Turning Tides, and the lady there was quite obviously liking my food. I'd been there quite regularly, and they kind of went, "Oh, try one," you know, and I was like, "Oh yeah," and I didn't like that. I don't know if I just got.
Yeah, but often from a fish and chip shop, probably not. Maybe too much oil. I think the homemade ones, you know, from a good Ngaito family.
Mm.
A good fishing family,
yeah.
You'll get a great power paddy.
I'm looking forward to the invite.
Yeah, okay.
I'm looking forward to the invite. You heard it, everyone. Yeah. It's out there in the air. It's into the universe. I've just had an invite for power paddy, the proper ones. That,
yes.
I you're probably right. I think I genuinely, because I genuinely love all food. There's not a lot of things I just kind of was expecting something.
Meh.
Yeah, I was because of the hype that I'd heard around it, and it was kind of the first time I'd had it, and I was like, oh, you know. It's a bit like the first time I had oysters. I don't dislike oysters,
yeah.
I don't love oysters. Like, you know, I love all seafood, like genuinely. So it was for me, it was a little bit of
black gold to me.
Yeah. Well,
I love it.
That's fine. I don't know what I'd have. I'd probably have, if I had a choice, this is going to sound so Essex. Which
is good
because that's where I'm from.
Mm.
But like a proper English Chinese meal, which just doesn't sound right.
Oh, no, I get it.
Yeah, because it's a different level. They taste different over there to here, but like a Chinese takeaway meal, like a banquet thing in the UK, I think that would be my...
I get this because I read about this, you know, and the influence of the different cultures there to the food. I mean, I might change my mind to my mum's mutton roast.
Yeah.
You know, like it's got to be hearty soul food, that last meal.
Yeah, I agree. Now you said that, I'm thinking of my mum's biryani because, like, my mum's from India.
Go.
I don't look it because I'm not exactly dark skinned.
Why wouldn't you eat that? That's making my mouth water.
It's like a mutton biryani. It's like, and it doesn't, it's nothing like anything you ever see in a store anywhere, like even in the English, like she's like from Bangalore.
I can imagine, it's beautiful.
It's green to start off with, like almost luminous green because there's so much coriander in it. So,
I love coriander.
And it's, so do I. Everyone says, other people say it tastes like soap, but it's like.
It's my favourite herb.
Yeah, so it's not cilantro either, it's coriander.
Mm.
But anyway, like, so again, like that with like my mum's chicken curry and pork vindaloo, which is like.
That's definitely last meal stuff.
Yeah, I think, actually, I've changed my mind.
Okay.
You've talked me into it. You've talked me out of it. Straight away. Like I knew what I wanted. Now I don't. I have no idea anymore. But I'm back to mum's biryani and chicken pork vindaloo. Oh, I'm salivating. I haven't had any lunch. And a chicken curry as well.
Yum.
Thigh curry. Yeah.
The best.
I might cook that this weekend. If I do that, my whole family will just descend on me like, "Dad's cooking biryani."
Yum.
Anyway, let's talk about the news. I want to talk about the news, and then we'll say later on in the show we'll talk about your good self. But there was a post on the page this week from one of our regulars who was upset, and I believe rightly so, that they had the house that either their house or a friend's house had been kind of targeted by real estate agents because someone had died, and they'd kind of got all these flyers through the and they knew that they hadn't had flyers in the. Like the neighbours hadn't had flyers, right? So it was very much they'd got these things like, you know, do you want to sell your house? I know someone in your area wants looking to buy, that kind of thing, based on the fact that clearly they'd known that there had been a bereavement in the family. And I'm a real estate agent, right? So that's my day job, right? I sell houses all the time, right? I would never, ever, it would never even cross my mind to prey on a bereavement in that manner, and I could understand that they were upset, but there are also a number of industries that kind of seem to prey on that as well. It's not just real estate agents, but this was about real estate agents, and I obviously jumped in my capacity as I'd like to consider a compassionate human being and a real estate agent. I jumped in and said I would never do that, but it does seem that quite a few people do. And there was other real estate agents in the group that jumped in and said exactly the same thing as me. You know, we're covered by a code of conduct. There's, you know, we're supposed to be decent, proper human beings. I'm subject to a police check every time I renew my license, those kind of, you know, we're supposed to be decent people. But at the same time, you also see all the newspaper articles about where real estate agents haven't been decent people. And those people give the rest of us particularly a pretty bad name. But I feel that's quite low. I tend to do the opposite. Like, I tend to, if I'm aware of a bereavement, I actually sort of even if I've been in regular contact with, I tend to leave them alone because I don't want to be seen to be that person.
Yeah. I mean, I think the human side, the empathetic side, is that we should leave people to grieve. In the Māori world, that's why we have an unveiling a year later, because when someone dies that's close to you, you are in that grieving world for that entire time, and you're meant to be given that time to actually grieve. And that, you know, we give that a year. I mean, you know, obviously it's not quite a year. It's never a time limit. But so there's that. But then, yeah, I don't know. I probably tend to agree with you, but, you know, people die.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I have a dead husband. and my kids call it their dead dad, which is really, really macabre. But it's kind of how we cope with, you know, kind of with humour and with that kind of black comedy. So we can be, myself and my three children can be quite crass about that.
But that's your right, okay, yeah, that, isn't yeah. it, to be fair? That's yeah. like you have that, you know that person, you knew that person, mm-hmm. you love that person. That's your way of, you know, perhaps honouring them and helping and dealing with things. Mm-hmm. I just think if someone's putting a, you know, just find out they've gone through the bloody, you know, the obituaries in the paper and found out that someone from so and so, you know, from someone from Green Island has bloody passed away, and then they're putting something in the door the following day. It feels very mercenary. It is. It's just it doesn't feel like a, you know. I mean, what they don't realise, and the point that people were making on the page, was that they've just told those people who they shouldn't use as a. Mm-hmm. It hasn't helped them.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It actually hasn't. Like, it hasn't helped them in their pursuit for a, you know, to do their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like when we moved to New Zealand like 15 years ago, and we were pregnant. Say we. I'm using the royal we here. My mm-hmm. wife was very pregnant. We were 5 months pregnant when we got here, and we went around to lots of places, lots of agents, and sort of said, hey, looking for a house, never bought a house in New Zealand before, da, da, da. And we spoke to so many people, I can't tell you who they were. But then 12 months later, a real estate agent phoned me up, and I can't remember who it was or where they were from or anything, and they said, are you still looking for a house? And I said, like we were desperate for a house. We were pregnant. Like, where do you think I've been living for 12 months? If that's the first time you've come back to me.
That's strange.
But they'd have been better off not, because I wouldn't have remembered, you know, at that time, but they'd have been better off not coming to me because it hadn't done their business, didn't do their business any favours, phoning me up 12 months later and say, hey, you still looking?
Mm.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's a bit like they haven't, putting those flyers in people's doors at that time doesn't actually.
I get that. I agree with you.
Doesn't help their business, in my mind.
No, I definitely agree with you.
No, you know, exactly. And whilst there's no naming and shaming on the page, and I won't allow the people to name those people who did it, because they have no defence and that's not fair, they will be telling their friends who that person was or who those people were.
It's
you know,
a small community.
And Dunedin's a small city, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the issue. Mm-hmm. I think we kind of put that one to bed. You know, that's quite fine. Next topic is the new Jacinda Ardern documentary.
Haven't seen it.
No, neither have I. But I find it intriguing, the vitriol that spouts up online. There is it's a very misogynistic, sexist kind of like anger that comes from a certain part of society against someone that would be on a world stage considered to be actually as leaders go, not a bad one, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you love them, loathe them or otherwise. But the world kind of looks at it and kind of goes, actually, New Zealand, COVID, Jacinda Ardern, actually not a bad, not a kind of bad response, right, generally. But you've only got to mention their name on social media to get a very different, angry, chauvinistic, misogynistic kind of response to, and we're 3 years on. Like that's the thing that amazes me. The 3 years on, that anger and that vitriol, but based on some pretty ropey logic, is still there.
I think though, I'm probably not. I don't delve into those spaces for those reasons as a female. But I think the polarisation of this government and where people are sitting on that spectrum allows this kind of keyboard warrior vitriol. It's sort of bubbled up to the surface. We're completely polarised at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where a lot of this hatred and nastiness comes from. It's that social media piece as well, though. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I'm old. I didn't start with all the social media stuff. You know, I didn't have a phone, any of that, you know. So it's like...
I remember my first phone when the phones came out.
Same. Yeah. So it's like, I'm not sure how my children, you know, sort of they're in their teens, manage all of this, actually. It's challenging. But it just allows for people to spit tacks at people, you know, and it's revolting. I do think Trump and all those other parts play a big part in this whole misogynistic view of every, and racism and sexism and just everything has bubbled to the surface. I don't feel, and I might be wrong, that I've seen it to this level before.
And I'd agree. Like, I mean, you've heard a bit about my heritage. My mum was Indian, right? So my dad was English. And I got a lot of racism directed at my family as a kid. And I felt as I got older, it got better. And I've seen it it's kind of gone back the other way. And I genuinely feel like after 53 years on the planet that it's as worse as I've ever seen it. And it's because, in my mind, it seems to be because that the people that we should be looking to for leadership are the ones that are throwing that misogyny, that racism, that sexism, that homophobia, that transphobia. They're the ones that are shouting at the loudest. Mm-hmm. Instead of leading us to a better and more accepting and more inclusive life, they're actually dragging us the other way. They almost want to drag us back into the 1950s when it comes to race relationships and God knows what else. Mm-hmm. And I find that that's where it's become, I mean, like, it's become the norm. That the President of the United States stands up, and we'll talk about him in a second, but stands up and says racist things and sexist things and, you know, transphobic things. And everyone's kind of going, well, if he can say it, must be okay for me to say it. And then social media's amplified that because you can always find another bigot somewhere on to come and be your friend on social media. Your outreach to bigotry is or to people that share your same viewpoint is far wider and bigger now that the internet exists. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
No.
You know, I've got teenage kids as well, and I've made sure that none of my kids are on social media before 16. Because actually I don't see it. I see it as a dangerous place to play. You know, and I'm still telling my 20-year-old when don't engage with that person. Right. I know you're right. Genuinely, I know you're right, but don't engage with that person. You're putting yourself in a situation where potentially you put yourself in harm's way, you know, and you don't need to fight that fight because it's not something you're going to win.
I think it's good for them to be aware of it, though.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think for my three children, both parents being Māori, I think politically it's really good for them to be aware of it. Mine are later teens, adults, but... But yeah, they tend not. They're quite savvy. They tend not to necessarily engage, but it's teaching them a thing or two.
Yes,
and I need them to be street fighters. I need to be part of the army of change, right?
Yeah,
the good army of change.
Yes.
And so I do need them to be aware. But there is a balance. I probably didn't manage their social media accounts very well. I'll be honest about that.
That's all right. We all do it. We all do it differently. Like, I mean, I spend so much time on social media because obviously that's kind of where What's News Dunedin has come from. And I set up What's News Dunedin because I saw things so dark and I didn't like them. And I had a choice. And my wife said to me, "You either do something about it, Richard, or you get off social media and just stay away from it. You know, because it's making you upset. It's making you angry. It's making you sad that people have these viewpoints and are able to share it so freely, you know. So What's News Dunedin was set up on the basis that I wanted a nice space. I wanted people to actually respect each other as if they were sitting face to face, which people don't do on social media. You know, they're always on the attack. They come out fists up. Does it, even on the stupidest things, people can disagree and suddenly be arguing and calling names. I don't allow any of that. You know, you're not in my space, so you wouldn't know. But that's how What's News Dunedin came to be. But, you know, my kids know that, again, my 20-year-old, very savvy, you know. But I kept him away from social media till he was 16 because I felt that there was just they needed to be a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
Before they touch that space.
I totally agree. Yeah.
So, I really do. Topic number three, the unravelling of Donald Trump. And I say that in the way that he seems to have gone super ballistic in his messages to almost – it always feels like a distraction with Donald, like, to be completely fair. I'll call him by his first name because we're friends. but it feels like a distraction because it feels like, you know, that all his effing and blinding that he's doing on his own – he had to set up his own social media platform in order so he could say stuff. You know, that tells you kind of like the person that he might be. But he's screaming and yelling at everyone. He's yelling into the void. He's screaming at clouds. He feels like he's to me, it looks like he's unraveling, like genuinely, because he's basically gone and attacked a country under the basis, very much under the previous, not he's not the only US president who have done it, under previous presidents where, like, I think it was George W. Bush possibly went into Iraq, and it's called, you know, these weapons of mass destruction that never, turns out, never existed, this threat that never existed, and the head of his counterintelligence counterterrorism guy walked out saying there was no threat. But now he's like screaming at everyone. He's kind of caused a problem, doesn't know how to fix it. Iran comes in with a 10-point peace plan, which is different to his 15-point peace plan. Suddenly he thinks it's the best thing. And then strangely, to some people kind of go, see, that's Donald, he's done a deal. I'm looking at that kind of going, that's a human being that is literally at the point of implosion, explosion, I don't know. It's frightening.
Yeah, I'm quite frightened actually for the world. I mean, I just don't engage too much with his rhetoric. I can't stand it. But I am, you know, concerned for the victims. Like, that's just as a mother, as a female. Like, I can't really. I think he's a madman. I mean, I don't have any more to say to that. Like, what? I'm surprised someone hasn't assassinated the guy. It's. I can't actually fathom it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get – I think everyone in the world that's reasonable is trying to get their head around why this guy is still in charge.
Yeah, exactly.
I just can't – I can't for the life of me understand
and he's being and he's being enabled by others as well. And that's the bit that, again, it just makes me – I shake my head at it daily because I can't understand – I'm the same. Like, you know, and then if you've got – that the US then criticising and saying and going to other countries and replacing their heads of state. You know, they literally went and kidnapped the Venezuelan guy. Don't even know his name. Maduro, possibly. Yeah. They went and kidnapped him. I've got no idea what's happened to him. But they've gone into someone else's country, kidnapped him. And that's okay because the Americans are doing it. But, like, someone needs to go into the US, kidnap the head of state, Donald, like, just put him in a nice little room with a Diet Coke and a cheeseburger, just like, don't do anything nasty to him. Just let him just sit there and bounce around the walls a little bit, and then replace the regime over there. Like, there's as much called in my mind to replace the US regime as there is to replace the Iranian regime. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a fan of the Iranian regime and the things that they've done. I'm not condoning their own violence against their own people and the abhorrent way in which they've treated many, many members of their society. Got no time for that whatsoever. But it doesn't give anyone the right to just kind of go, tell you what, I know better than you. I'm going to go in and then start screaming at all the people that are kind of going, I don't want to borrow that, because NATO don't want to borrow that. NATO's defensive, for God's sake. NATO's supposed to be there. And, like, everyone who's – we learned about NATO when I was years ago, because it was kind of closer to when things – when NATO had been formed. We're much closer to it now than we were then. NATO's a defensive force. NATO's put in place to protect people from being attacked, not to go and attack people. It's not a offensive establishment. Donald wants to use it as, like, you know, as his offensive lineup to kind of go, like, we're going to attack some people because I've decided that these people don't deserve to have that leader or this leader. I mean, where do they get off making those decisions for the world?
Yeah, I don't. That's what I can't work out either. I can't understand why the rest of these really strong, powerful leaders are saying no enough, but yet nothing's done.
No,
he's just still allowed to behave like this megalomaniac. Like I can't work it out.
Yeah, the biggest noise last week, from what I could see, and you only kind of see what's reported, right? The biggest noise last week came from the strangest of places, the Pope.
Yeah, like, interesting.
I'm Roman Catholic. Cult on the table. I'm not practicing. I brought up in church. I'm Roman Catholic. I've been baptized, communion, confirmation, the whole nine yards, right? Pretty much. But that was the strangest. But I think religion's got a lot to answer for a lot of the problems in the world as well. But the one person who stood up the loudest was the damn Pope. Mm-hmm. But it should have been every one of those other, you know, when he's threatening to decimate a civilization, which is basically an admission of genocide and war crime and everything else, it was the Pope that stood up
I noted that, and I thought, well, I thought maybe that might, because, you know, we're talking about a heavy Christian support group here, so I just thought maybe that would shift, but it has done nothing. So
hasn't changed a thing, has
it? Yeah, no, it's terrifying.
And now we're in this really sort of tentative, Israel don't want the peace ceasefire, so Israel are just doing what they're thinking. Like, in Iran's peace plan or whatever it was, like, you know, no more fighting in the Middle East. And then... It's quite clear. Mm-hmm. And then both the US and Israel went, well, that doesn't mean Lebanon, right? What part of no more fighting in the Middle East?
It's like children, isn't it?
Exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah, and again, like, so you got, and so it's just, it's on a knife edge right now. Mm. Like, I don't know, the doomsday clock, I mean, I'm surprised the doomsday clock isn't beyond, like, midnight. You know, I'm surprised the doomsday clock hasn't gone, we're not quarter past one right now in the morning, like, because seriously, it feels... I've never felt more scared.
No, well, I don't think there'd be a person alive, really, that doesn't get up early in the morning or when they wake up and look at the news. Because I'm constantly thinking, well, what happened overnight?
Yes, you know, exactly. Am I going to start looking towards to the skies to see the cloud coming? You know,
exactly.
the nuclear, you know, mushroom of attack somewhere, because it feels. I'm not saying World War III is happening, but it's like, but it feels as close as
call it World War III.
You would?
Yeah, I would.
You would?
I think that's what we're in right now.
Yeah.
It's just a different type of world war.
Exactly.
But it's definitely happening.
It's mad.
Yeah.
And then our government has watched fuel prices go up to $4 a litre for diesel and done stuff all about it. I look at that and kind of go back to Jacinda Ardern. At least they tried to do something. They looked at it and went, the cost of living crisis has got exponentially worse since that time. We're far more paycheck to paycheck now than we were in Labour's time before.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, National looked at that and gone, that's all right. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, well, the reshuffle of their cabinet is like, it's laughable.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, from a Māori perspective. I've got one Māori in there, you know, like.
And he didn't even know who that was in his cabinet when asked the other day.
No clue. It was embarrassing. And I'm just like, well, there you go. That's just so obvious about what we've got. What we've got in front of us is a group of privileged white people who have no clue how the other half live.
No, absolutely.
Like, no clue.
And I say that as a privileged white person. I know.
I'm a privileged white person, but on the inside I'm Māori. But I understand what it's like for South Auckland. I understand, well, no, actually that's probably unfair. I can empathise with that because I think I know. You know, I don't live that though.
No.
And there are people living that.
Well, absolutely, every day.
You know.
I want to talk about you next, but before we do, I want to get a quick word from our wonderful sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
Have you been to Casa Valencia?
No.
No.
Where is it?
It's at the end of Andy Bay Road. So if you go up and you've got the BP on the corner, there's a roundabout. You go straight past all the big box stores, heading out towards Anderson's Bay.
Yeah.
Out the bottom of Andy Bay Road, and it turns into Musselburgh Rise, and you do a wiggle, and then you've got Baker's Dozen on the corner, and then just a little bit, that's where LJ Hooker is.
Yeah.
So that's where I work, just down there. And just along there is Casa Valencia. Okay. Filipino bakery. Stunning. I eat there every single day.
Well,
And they're just wonderful people. Just fantastically wonderful people. But they are, and the food is just glorious.
So sounds amazing.
I just walk in there, and they say everything from empanadas to like bratwurst in sort of brioche coated stuff, and these little pie things, and they do this.
Wow.
They do a sisig pie, which is a spicy pork mince pie square thing. It's like a little bit of. I'm so hungry, Megan. I'm so hungry. I really should eat before I come and do these shows. But it's glorious.
That sounds amazing.
I go in there. They do a chicken empanada, and it's good quality. I mean, like $3.50 for it. Like a little pie thing. Like two of those does me lunch. It's cheaper than a sandwich at Koopman's.
Love that.
Glorious. and such amazing people too.
That's cool.
There we have such a laugh. It's a trip. That you get every day, you kind of look forward to, you know. It's an experience. It's a customer experience. You kind of go. I'm going to enjoy that, and then we get upset with them because on Saturdays they do other food, and I'm not there on a Saturday. They do special food on a Saturday, like they did like dumplings and stuff like that, and I'm never there.
Bummer.
No, but I've got to the point now where they do give me staff lunches,
nice,
which is like the food that they don't sell, but they eat themselves, and I go in there, and go like, here's a staff lunch, which is fantastic. Love them to pieces. Anyway, glad to have them as sponsors of the show. I want to talk about you. That's why you're here.
Okay.
And for the people that don't know you, including myself, because I genuinely don't, I am aware of you and aware of your mahi over a number of different institutions. Perhaps give us the 5-minute Cliff Notes version of Megan Portiki and how you got to where you are, because you are, as I introduced you, and I've done on my pronunciation is awful, you are the University of Otago's first to pow. Tility. So I really want to know. I want to get under the skin of that as well as part of what we do. But please just give us a little bit of how we got there in the first place.
Oh gosh, that makes me nervous.
Please don't be.
Real quickly. How did I get here? So I grew up on a farm out on the Otago Peninsula, next to my marae, and then grew up like on my marae. So very, very privileged upbringing. So my dad's Māori, my mum's Pākehā from South Dee, but I grew up very much in a Māori world, even though obviously I don't look Māori at all, but I didn't realise I didn't look Māori until I was about 18, but that's another story.
That's all right.
And so then went to Porobola School, Queens High School, love Queens, hard Queens girl, and just ended up at Teachers College, but sort of fell into tertiary education, kind of got sucked up into tertiary, and you know, sort of end up doing my master's and PhD, but over a long time. So I would call myself an academic. I did learn Te Reo Māori as a second language in my 20s. Married my cousin, was love, but also slightly transactional, and that's another story that's very political. So I grew up in the thick of Māori politics, of my tribal politics. So it was always my intention very early to have children and speak Māori to those children and create another wave of politicians, young politicians or something like that. So, I mean, that's kind of like, but the rest, the backstory is pretty boring. Like, I'm just this Dunedin girl from the peninsula. Like, there's not really much more to say. I didn't do an OE, anything like that. Love this place. And so I guess through all of that, including a dead husband. my husband, Tohu Portiki, was an incredible politician and leader, and I learnt so much with him. And I've learnt a lot from my dad and everyone else around me, a lot of leadership around me. I guess that's how I've ended up where I've ended up. It's not necessarily I've gone, this is my trajectory. because it certainly wasn't there. It was just like, but there was a big part that was, there was probably a lot of pressure? Probably was this kind of pressure on me just being where I am in the family and some expectations. So that probably drove me to be who I am a bit, a little bit as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of it in a nutshell. I don't know if that's very confusing, probably. People are probably thinking, what?
No, that's all right. So, like, obviously where you are now, but you started a little bit further away from the university, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Like, were you, because I remember you were there at the Polytechnic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And then went through the whole Te Pukenga change.
Yeah.
And then back out the other side of that, like the unchange.
Yeah.
So what was that like to kind of traverse? Because you were you this?
I was a CEO for, I think, oh God, I can't, like a year and a half, maybe something like that, maybe 2 years. But I was put into that position. Yeah, it was messy. It was messy, really hard, but just to front foot that, I want to say I love the Polytechnic and I love what it stands for and I love the type of education they provide there, so I think it's fantastic. I just think it's been through a really, really rough patch, and I end up being at the helm of that.
It's been through the ringer, hasn't it? And through and genuinely through no fault of their own. Like this, that it's become
political football.
That was the term exactly I was going to use. For both governments, multiple governments, to go through and kind of go, and we've got a very partisan kind of approach to things at the moment. Like, and this is what you're talking about, that division and that polarity.
Mm-hmm.
If the Red Party do something, the Blue Party have to hate it. If the Blue Party do something, the Red Party have to hate it. And then the people on the same sides, you know, it's almost like, so it's like, it was like with Three Waters Reform, because Three Waters Reform was Labour, they went, we're not doing that. And because like Te Pukenga was like, they went, we're not going to do that, you know, and we don't have a better answer.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to not do it because the other lot
did the opposite of what the other
did
one
it,
did,
you know, and there's certain things in my mind that should be beyond politics.
Mm-hmm.
Homelessness.
Yeah.
You know, putting a roof over people's heads, like general infrastructure as a whole, you know, like, you know, for the betterment of our motto is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Tertiary education is an absolute, and health. These things, they should not be able to be used by anyone, politicians or anyone else, as a point score in political football.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the Polytech was victim to.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I learned so much selfishly, I learned a lot, and it was a massive privilege to be in that role. And I'm a different person. I would like to say, I'm still Megan. Everyone knows me as Megan, but I've changed. That changed me, and I see the world quite differently after that. And, you know, I became quite sick last year because it was just so, it was like being in the heat of the fire every day.
Yeah.
And all I did was just try and get up every morning, look in the mirror and say, God, what are your value? You know, what are your key values, Megan? What are you here for? Right, remind yourself it's bigger than you. Like that's what got me through it, really.
Did you find during that process that you were just kind of constantly bashing your head against the wall? Did it feel like that, or were there moments of sunshine in that?
The sunshine was the staff and the students, like so much sunshine. But man, I was just trying to umbrella all that from like hold up an umbrella, because the political stuff was right over me all the time. I had all of that. I had a number of angles at me. And so I was just trying to shelter staff from that to do the amazing job that they do.
They do an amazing job. Yeah. And it's a vocation, right? People don't go into, as far as I can tell, you know, people don't go into education or health for the money and the accolades, right? No. You go in there because actually you're that kind of human being that wants to give back knowledge or give back care or whatever it is that you're doing, and it becomes you could go elsewhere and earn more money and have an easier life but yet those people don't do that. Those people stick it out because actually these are the people that we want doing that, right? Mm-hmm. Because actually they believe it from the bottom of their feet to the top of their heads that's what they are put on this planet to do, right? And we treat them like poo.
I know.
I don't mean me. I'm going to take myself out of the we at that point. But we do. We don't. We just don't. We don't give them the credit and the love and the care and the financial reward that they deserve.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I'm a primary school teacher originally, so I was there because I'm passionate about exactly what you just talked about. So, yeah, it's I hope things settle. I'm pretty sure things are settling down for them anyway, so I hope so. But who knows what's coming with the change in a government, perhaps. Who knows?
Another government. Do we get Tupakenga back? Like, I know it sounds bloody stupid, but
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. No. I'd hate to see it. I think the whole of the tertiary organisation would just go, that's it, we're moving. Yeah. we're going abroad, you know, yeah. Like, we're going to go somewhere else. If that tried to come back against, they'd just lose every single member of staff.
Mm-hmm.
how much staff did you lose in that process, like genuinely?
About last year, about 100 moved on. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm using that term loosely because obviously it's parts that I can't really probably talk about. But yeah,
it was a lot.
It was super challenging. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying everything was done perfectly because it wasn't. But, you know, I just tried to keep walking the talk, really.
Yeah. What's it like to see your face in a paper like that, like on a regular basis as well?
It's weird. It's really odd. I mean, I don't get a paper, so I don't read it. I mean, I do write in the Weekender. I have a column that I write in now and again. That's kind of fun. But that's like personal. Yeah, it's a bit odd. It's almost like you're looking at someone else.
Yep.
Well, you are, really. You're looking at another Megan. You're looking at the Megan that's running this part of the ship at the moment. But it's not really the Megan that my friends and my children know.
Yeah.
You know, you're all these different people, right?
Yes.
You know, I'm very authentic and very real, so you'll get me. You will get me. But there's a part of me in that role that had to be very protected as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm standing for council. I've stood for council a couple of times in the by-election, and I see my face around town, my own face. And I said to someone yesterday, I said, it's like being in a twisted house of mirrors. I keep driving around and seeing myself kind of looking back at me, and that's not the real me. The people I see talking about me online for my views and beliefs and whatever don't know me. They would like me if they actually ever had a real conversation with me, because genuinely I've met very few people. Excuse me, that didn't like me,
yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't want to sound egotistical or anything. Like, I'm genuinely someone that people kind of like.
I totally get it.
Think he's all right, you know. Yeah. I might not be their best friend, but like, no one walks away from me going, Jesus Christ, that's a horrible human being. I'm aware of that, you know. But then you see people saying horrible things about you, and you kind of go, you don't know me.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, people definitely did say things about me, but I know, I'm very grounded. And I know who I am. I know I'm a good person. You know, like none of that fazed me. I never took that personally. You know, it wasn't a thing for me. So I just didn't take it personally.
This is
you
the beauty of 4FM, right
it.
Here. Like,
I get it.
If you cough a little bit on air, they'll bring you a glass of water.
Oh, that's magical.
I know. Yeah. That's the one. That is the wonder of community radio. What they don't understand, what they don't know, is I'm allergic to water because there's not enough alcohol or caffeine in it.
Yeah, you know, I get
and
it.
I don't drink. Like, genuinely don't drink. But they are awesome human beings, and that's the joy of live radio as well. We can't edit this out. The role you're in right now,
mm-hmm.
So you obviously you were, up until very recently, you were CEO of the Polytechnic, in its recent new guise. Mm-hmm. Did you leave and then, or did is that a question I can't ask?
I did leave. No, I did leave. I did leave, but it wasn't a simple. It wasn't easy. Wasn't made easy.
Right, okay. And then did the university then come and tap you on the shoulder and go, hey, Megan, I've got this... Because obviously this is a new...
Yeah.
I understand it's a new role.
This role was developed with Mana Whenua, so I am... My other hat is I am Mana Whenua, so I knew about this role and its development. It's gone through a number of iterations. It took some time to get to where it is, so a couple of years.
Right.
I wasn't personally working on that, so I knew about it, and I knew it would be a good role for me. I didn't line myself up to think I was going to get it, so I had to go through a proper process like everyone else, and I wasn't super confident. I think I'd been a bit battered, so I felt a little bit nervous going into the interview, but, you know, I won the role, so that's really fantastic, and I feel grateful for that. I think it's just a reconfiguration of me for the meantime and look at a different things through a different lens in a different institution.
Cool. I want to make sure we get another advert in from our wonderful sure. sponsor. And as soon as I do, after that, I want you to explain the role.
Yeah, sure.
So I'll give you a minute to think about it.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
So you've had time to think.
My mouth is watering.
On a Friday, they do the best twisted donut, like just a sugary covered twist. It's all about the food for me,
yeah,
Megan.
Yeah, I get it.
So anyway, you've had a little moment to think and salivate at the same time. Tell us about yeah. this role, and perhaps give us a little bit of background as to the reasons, perhaps why it's come to play.
It's quite a tricky one to explain, but really in a nutshell, we've got a what they call a mana to mana agreement. It's kind of like this modern term for a treaty agreement, which I guess is, you know, Pākehā or tangata tiiti, whatever you want to call that partnership, and then Māori coming together, signing an agreement that we're going to work together. This role is the conduit to the university, you know, obviously paid by the university, so I'm an employee of the university, and to Mana Whenua. And I have my own quasi-board, which has chaired by the chair of the university, and also someone from Otago. So we've got three different runanga on there that represent those runanga. And so, yeah, it's really about driving forward this idea of what treaty-led looks like. And look, honestly, we're designing the ship as we're sailing it, because I don't know whether anyone really in the country has nailed that. I think in the Labor government time, there was a lot of co-leadership, so I think they were attempting what treaty lead looks like, but we still probably are working towards it as a country, you know? And at the moment, things are so politically bizarre I'm just putting that in a bubble out there, trying not to look at that too hard. But, you know, Grant at the uni is trying hard to walk the talk, I think. And I'm not saying they are treaty led. It's a process, right? It's a trajectory that might take quite some time. And I'm not necessarily saying I have the answers, although everyone probably thinks I should. I can see what treaty led is for me and for my people, but we've got to take the university on that journey too. And for me, it's actually about elevating tangata tiiti. Like, I love the idea that Pākehā Māori, my mum and my dad, can be at the table together with their cups full together, and my mum can open with the mihi, she can open the karakia. We don't need to dial a Māori to do that. We can do that together. So it's really about elevating and giving people confidence and affirmation that they can, and that's kind of the journey that I really would like to take the uni on.
All right. So have you been tasked with some? I know you said you're creating, you know, you're building the boat as you're sailing it. But have you been tasked with some specific things to kind of?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have a work plan. They're quite lofty things. I mean, one is getting us to treaty led, so what that looks like. Definitely parts of looking at potential co-ownership of certain, you know, areas. Like, you know, now our iwi or our hapu are financially more equipped to be able to be partners in certain things. You'll notice in Dunedin we're putting up buildings and you know, changing the face of it as we go. So I think we're not just talking about the occasional scholarship, you know, we're talking about real partnership that works for both parties.
Yep.
The Māori aren't draining the resource of that, or that we're actually contributing to the EFT issue or the other issues that might be going on for the tertiary sector. And we want to be part of the solution, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the issue, I think, for me.
I think that's important, isn't it? At the end of the day, that's what, you know, that's what we're all striving. One of the things as Pākehā or tangata tiiti for me of coming to this country was the wonder of the what we potentially have, what we're supposed to have, like with regards to partnership and with regards to Maori, and my journey along that kind of understanding is still really, I'm in infancy, but I'm doing my, because I come from a biracial family myself. I come from a society where racism is prolific, you know, and it hasn't got any better. But I've come to a place where actually the difference here is at least that like Mana Whenua are that we're here first, if that makes sense.
I think so, but I think the treaty is really where the clincher, right? We've got a document, and that's really the difference between us and Australia and other places, right?
Yeah, I felt so sorry with that the vote with in Australia.
It's like, awful.
Just how hard is it to acknowledge?
To just move on, to keep moving. I think we've got this treaty, and that's why we talk about treaty-led, because we've got a document that we signed with the Queen.
Yep.
And whether you like it, it's agreement or not, and we kind of have to get there. And it's a journey, right? Like, Rome wasn't built in a day. I get it. But I'm not willing to die over it personally, but I'm willing to put energy into taking it somewhere good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we need to collectively. My kids know far more about it because they were schooled here than I do. And then quite often look to my own tamariki for the answers to stuff when it comes to that.
Cool.
I believe that's so cool, right? Because why wouldn't I as a dad want to learn from my kids?
Oh, totally.
You know, but I see so much. I see so much pushback. You know, from a certain demographic, and I kind of get it almost to a point. Like, you're angry, you're old, you know potentially you're white, you know, and I say that as a white. I'm a white person. I'm genuinely a white person, right? So these are my people I'm talking about. So, you know, no one should be coming at me kind of going, "Oh, you can't say stuff like that," all right? But I'm desperate in my lifetime to get to a point where I don't see that pushback anymore. Mm. Like, I was born in the 70s. Now in 2026, I would have hoped in that time we'd have got further than we
have. Well, I think we have, though.
We've got far. Don't get me wrong. We have got far.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, like, I'm actually, look, to be honest, I've been pretty sheltered. You know, one, being white has sheltered me. I have not really butted up against racism that you may have experienced or others in other areas, like, or just being, by being brown, right? I think we've actually... We've moved and we haven't moved. I think the undercurrent of racism comes out still in government policies, and it's very, you know, insipid. Like, it creeps, right, in this country. It's not necessarily overt, and that's the stuff that's like the carpet's taken out from under us, because we have no way to address those policies.
We're left with those
institutional kind of racism. So that's the stuff that gets me upset, probably, but honestly, the wave of goodwill at the uni is there. I think where I'm going to get traction as the Potiti is with Tangata Titi.
Yeah,
that's the difference we need to, like, if we empower Tangata Titi to feel so bloody good about themselves, know their own whakapapa, know their Scottish history, whatever it is, because I think there's definitely an education piece there, and actually be able to do karakia, whatever, all those things, and feel great about it. I think really that's why I think that's probably why I look the way I do. Maybe I can take people on a journey because they might feel more comfortable with me. Like, maybe that's why I'm here. Because I'm not going to go around and knock people on the head with a taiha and tell them that they're not doing things right. It's just not going to help.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I agree. You know, you see people get defensive about things like karakia because it's they probably don't understand it, but B, you know, it's just something that's easy to push back against, isn't it? It's because it's like you just said that in a different language and no one understands you. You know, so it's like I sit through many again and I've got no idea what's been said.
No,
and I don't care. I just think it's beautiful. I honestly don't care. I look at it and kind of go, this is why I love what the place that I'm chosen to live in. You know, it's a part of the reason why I'm here. It wouldn't be as fulfilling or as genuine for me if it wasn't for that.
Mm.
Because I can live in England, Like, you know, if New Zealand was just another version of England, or like Australia, just another version of England. Why move 19,500 kilometres? Like, I could just stay where I was, save myself the hassle, have paid the mortgage off by now, so I didn't have to start that again when I got over it, you know, and actually be quite,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But I've been absorbed, and I genuinely feel like there's something very different and I love the guardians of the, you know, the land, sea, and air, and that kind of thing, but I believe it. It's not like some kind of you know, sort of fictional, like, fantasy land that I'm living in. You know, Māori, you know, firmly hold on to that and believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that and kind of go, yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. You're one of, I think we've got a wave of goodwill. I mean, I know all the other stuff's out there. I know it exists, the racism and the prejudice and the fear. The fear is probably the biggest issue, but honestly, I'm just going with the goodwill. I believe in it, and I've only got a short amount of time on this planet, and I haven't got time. I've got to be able to make a shift here, and, you know, for everyone.
And what a great place to end the show. And I'm hoping you'll come back now that we're friends, because we are now. We talk about food. You'll come back and let us know how you're getting on as we go forward in the future. If you just sit there while I round out the show, thank you very much for taking the time out today.
Sure, no problem.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Richard Knights, and you've all been wonderful. Remember, if you're looking for a robust, respectful adult debate about all things local and further afield, and a working online community that doesn't take itself too seriously, come and find What's News That Eden on Facebook and join our fun. On next week's show, we'll be talking to the wonderful Anna Knight, who's now an Alliance Party candidate, and we look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12 on ORFM. And if you want to listen to the show again, or simply share it with your friends, you can find the podcast oar.org.nz, or even on Spotify, YouTube, or your favourite podcast provider.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.